This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Infinity's Embrace by Anna Carvin. Narrated by Jillian Macy. Chapter 1. He sensed the medic long before she appeared. Her aura was different to the general's, and it stood out like a beacon amidst the background noise of hundreds of human and Cordolian souls. It wasn't dark and oppressive like the general's. It wasn't soaked in blood. He had never encountered a battle aura as strong as the one that radiated from Tarak al-Alkadian, and the mere memory of it made his bloodlust rise. Their encounter had been swift and bloody, and if not for Alkadian's physical enhancements, the general would have bled out through a vicious stab wound in his gut. The general was fast, but he was just a little bit faster, and he'd managed to deal the first blow. But Alkadian, like the rest of the First Division warriors, had been made into something more, something other, and for that reason alone, he'd been able to survive and turn the fight to his advantage, severing the assassin's left arm. In the end, the general had spared him, not out of mercy, but because he thought he could use him.
"I will find a way to break your mind bond, assassin."
His lips curved into a cold, cynical smile. He didn't believe it. His Kakui channels were broken, and although he'd been left with some abilities, he was nothing more than a slave, rendered speechless, and bound to follow the carefully implanted commands of his mistress until death granted him sweet release. Too bad he was so very hard to kill. His encounter with the general was the closest he had come to death in a very long time. And then, the infernal warrior had the nerve to spare his wretched life. Now, more than ever, he longed for the merciful embrace of nothingness. But he could not, would not, die by his own hand. That was forbidden. Right now, his patron deity, Cain, the god of death and destruction, must be laughing at him from his dark throne in the underworld.
"I'm coming in, Katach."
The medic's gentle voice pierced the silence, filtering through hidden speakers in the ceiling. Katach. She always called him that. It was an ancient High Cordolian word, and it held different meanings depending on how it was used. Assassin. Killer. Child of Cain. Tainted one. Some considered it a derogatory term, but it also had an older, secret meaning. Ruler. That meaning had been lost a long, long time ago.
"You've been able to control yourself on the last two occasions. Promise you won't try to harm me?"
"I have no quarrel with you, medic."
He shook his head and spread his remaining hand wide, knowing she could see him on some external monitor. It was the only way he could convey his answer. She knew he couldn't say a word, and she didn't have enough ability with the Kakui for him to communicate with her through mind speech. Very few did. The Kakui channels of most Cordolians closed shortly after birth. He was one of the rare exceptions. He shrugged, trying to shake out the strange tingling sensation that rippled through his left shoulder. Ever since the general had cut off his left arm, he'd been plagued with the odd feeling that his limb was still intact. It was of no consequence. Left arm or not, he could still kill Alkadian if the right opportunity presented itself.
"Do you want to live, wretch?"
The general's words rang in his ears as the compulsion to kill thrummed through his veins, pulsated with a dark rhythm and pervading every fiber of his being. The mistress had so skillfully threaded the command through his mind bond that it resonated deeply within him, even when she was on the other side of the universe.
"Kill General Tarak al-Alkadian and bring his human mate to me, preferably alive."
Until the order was fulfilled, nothing else mattered. He would carry out the command to the letter, and anyone who dared stand in his way was at risk. He wouldn't touch the child, though. His orders said nothing about a child. At the time of imprinting, his mistress hadn't known the general's mate was with child. There was a distinct possibility, though, that for the first time in his short, illustrious career, he might fail. Everything had changed. For the first time in his life, he'd been captured. Not in a billion revolutions could he have imagined they would take him alive. He wasn't surprised when the Qualum door sealing his prison started to unravel, its dark fibers coming apart to reveal the female medic accompanied by two warriors. After all, he'd already sensed their approach. Of course, he couldn't actually see them, but he could sense them, and his second vision enabled him to see far more than the naked eye. The two warriors had the dark, tainted auras of seasoned killers, and they were as dangerous as anything or anyone he'd encountered in the Nine Galaxies. The medic, on the other hand, had a gentler presence. No, gentle probably wasn't the right word for it. She was as strong as any of them, but she was a healer, not a killer. He wasn't accustomed to dealing with her kind. He retreated to the corner of the room, holding out his remaining hand in what he hoped was a pacifying gesture.
"My fight is not with you."
His orders were to kill the general and capture his mate. Nothing more, nothing less. Psychic compulsion forced him to carry out those commands at all costs. And if that meant staying in control until he could escape, then so be it. Fighting now would only lead to his death, because he had no weapons and no left arm. And he had no doubt the two warriors who had entered his cell were members of the notorious First Division. Now was not the time. The odds weren't in his favor.
"Stop thinking like that. They can help you. If anyone can help you break the mind bond, it's these people, these sworn enemies of the Empire."
A glimmer of hope flared in his chest, but he swiftly crushed it. Hope was a pointless emotion.
"Is something amusing, Katach?"
His lips curved upwards, the points of his fangs protruding over his lips in a cold, bitter smile. He raised an eyebrow, but made no effort to try and answer her. After all, what could he possibly say?
"The general has found someone who speaks your language. He's going to come and see you, but first, I need to immobilize you."
"Immobilize?" "I'll temporarily disable your nervous system from the neck down. As much as you'll want to try and kill him, you won't be able to move a muscle. Think of it as a manual override of your hardwired compulsion. When you're spending all your energy straining against your restraints, you don't seem to be able to focus on anything else." He turned his face towards her, focusing on the complex tangle of emotions she radiated. Like others of his kind, the so-called silent ones, he'd been stripped of his sight shortly after birth. It had been done for a reason. His masters had trained him to hone his other senses until they were preternaturally acute, and one could not properly develop the second sight if true vision was still intact. So, they had blacked out his eyes. Now, of course, his kakui sense was equal to none. His ability to read intent and emotions was exquisite. His hearing was ridiculously sharp, as was his sense of smell. He might be sightless, but he sensed more and perceived far more than those who saw with their eyes. His was a world of energy and movement, a rich sensory landscape where even inanimate things could be seen and understood in perfect detail. When he reached out with his kakui, he could see everything. "I trust you won't try and fight this." She held something in her hands, a collar-like device. The two warriors came beside him, positioning themselves threateningly close, their hands resting on the hilts of their swords. They radiated menace, and their intentions were obvious. His battle lust began to rise, making the fingers of his right hand twitch. One of the few pleasures left to him in his cursed existence was the savage thrill that came from facing a worthy opponent during the course of an assignment. There were so few in the universe who could actually match him in a fight, and in his younger days, he might have been tempted to pit himself against any First Division warrior who crossed his path, just so he could test his skills. But he was older and wiser now, and he'd learned restraint. If he tried anything at this very moment, he would enjoy the taste of a sharp, Kalidom blade. He was clearly outmatched, and he truly had no intention of harming the medic. So he remained still, nodding in assent as she approached him. Despite his reputation and his nature, she didn't project fear. She was merely cautious. "It's a neural immobilizer," she explained matter-of-factly, placing it into his right hand as if that would somehow reassure him. His smile faded, turning into a look of resignation. He'd known what it would feel like even before he touched it. It was a hard, slim, lightweight device with a small protrusion at one end. He nodded again, handing the device back to her and waving his hand impatiently. "Just get it over with." Strangely, he trusted the medic. He couldn't detect any deception in her demeanor, and in all of their interactions so far, she'd been open with him. "I'm going to place this around your neck. A small flexible wire will work its way into your spinal cord and deliver a substance that will temporarily paralyze you from the neck down. I have to stress that its effect will be only temporary. It's crude, but aside from putting you in restraints, it's the only thing we can do to try and lessen the effects of your compulsion. At least this way, you won't be constantly trying to strain against your bonds." Yes, this particular compulsion was irritatingly crude. Whenever he was in Acadian's presence, his body acted of its own volition. He stared at her with his mind's eye, his expression turning blank. He understood it perfectly well. Her efforts at reassurance were unnecessary. Why should he be afraid when he was at the absolute mercy of the general? Acadian could have had him killed long before now. Instead, he'd confined him in a quiet cell. At least he was no longer shackled in restraints like some pathetic beast. They hadn't tortured him. He was fed and clothed, and his injury had been promptly seen to. Truly, what did this formidable Cordolian want with him? "You will bring me the head of the Empress of Kithia." Madness. He forced himself to be still as the medic deftly placed the device around his neck. A cool, gel-like substance was released from the device as it clicked into place, covering the back of his neck.
It's going to activate in a moment. You'll feel a slight sting.
The sting didn't bother him. What he wasn't prepared for was the heavy sensation of paralysis that immediately spread through his body, disconnecting his brain from his limbs. The two warriors moved swiftly, catching him before he crashed to the floor.
"Don't worry, we've got you."
The medic spoke again, her voice soft. It was strange that these enemies of his could be so decent with him, when his kind were so feared and detested by most ordinary Cordolians. But then again, he was completely at their mercy now. A sudden wave of terror coursed through him, like a fierce atmospheric storm, overwhelming in its intensity. Complete loss of control. It had been a long, long time since he'd felt so utterly helpless. He couldn't move. He couldn't even feel the hands that held him upright, because his neural sensory input had been cut off. Panic hit him, stripping him of all self-control. It raged within him like a swirling vortex, threatening to suck away his sanity. He, who didn't fear anything in the universe, was suddenly gripped with sheer terror. He raged against it, hating the emotion, hating the fact that he was prone to such weakness, when he should just accept what was happening to him. He shouldn't succumb to such pointless emotions. What use did a silent one have for emotion? Fear gave way to anger. He reached deep within himself and grasped the only thing that could keep him centered, the familiar core of his kakui. It was his life force, the living energy contained in every molecule of the universe. He embraced the dark energy that rippled through him, and bit by bit, he regained control. Using his sixth sense to feel the state of his body. He was indeed paralyzed, but he chose to believe it wouldn't last. The medic had said so, and he trusted her.
"I felt that."
Surprise radiated from her and the two warriors who held him upright.
"You did something just now."
"Yes, I did."
His ability with the kakui was strong enough that if he allowed it, or if he lost control, even talentless ones could feel something. After all, they were all connected to the universe in some way. They were all part of the vast, eternal nexus of swirling energy that remained long after they were gone. He found he was able to smile again, his panic dissipating like vapor touched by the rays of a distant planet's sun. His usual mask was back, his features twisting into a cold, cynical expression. He didn't know of any other way to smile.
"Relax," the medic said.
The two warriors remained as still as stone, their auras strong and unwavering.
"We aren't going to kill you yet," one of them said,
a surprising note of humor in his rough voice.
"If the general wanted you dead, you'd be dead already."
"Well, isn't that reassuring?"
He flashed a savage grin before turning his head, the only part of him that could still move, towards the door. Because he felt something. A familiar aura approached, dark and powerful and compelling. It made him want to kill. The cursed blood in his veins seethed with bloodlust, and a sensation akin to pain thrummed through his skull, piercing behind his sightless eyes. The general was coming, and he yearned to cut off the bastard's head, because after their last encounter, he surmised that was one of the few ways to ensure these cursed creatures met certain death. The First Division warriors were abominations, demons in Cordolian form. Just like
him. This happened every time he found himself in Acadian's presence. His desire to kill went off the charts, and his mind was filled with uncontrollable bloodlust. That was the compulsion at work, poisoning his thoughts and turning him into nothing more than a lethal puppet. Perhaps the immobilization collar had been a good idea after all. His body was no longer able to move, a small mercy given his current circumstances. The Qualum door opened again, revealing General Acadian and another Cordolian, one whose presence had gone undetected until he stepped across the threshold.
Strange.
That rarely ever happened. The newcomer's aura made him react with a sharp intake of breath, and he strained against his mental bonds, trying to suppress his killing intent.
Focus, Katach.
Although she was whispering, the medic's gentle voice was loud in his ears.
My name is Ashrael,
is what he wanted to tell her, but because of the mind bond, he couldn't. After all, assassins weren't supposed to talk. He was supposed to be the ghost, the soundless shadow who skirted the line between the living and the dead, never seen and never heard. His thoughts weren't his own. He had no voice. He was nothing more than a silent killer, a deadly wraith. He was what he was. How could these fools expect to change him? Chapter 2. Morning in the desert was a glorious thing. Noah closed her eyes, letting the sunlight wash over her as she perched on a small outcrop of flat gray rocks. The air still held a chill, but as the sun crept higher, its rays kissed her face, bleeding red through her pale eyelids. Soon, the chill would give way to warmth. Perhaps she'd even get to feel a bit of that warmth before they came for her and took her back to their makeshift infirmary. She wasn't supposed to be out here, but unable to stand the terrible dream thoughts invading her mind, thoughts leaking from others, she'd snuck out, taking advantage of the early morning stillness. She had no filter, no ability to control the mental images flooding her mind. Some days, it was absolute torture. Noah opened her eyes and looked out at the dark, menacing collection of structures in the distance. They rose out of the red sand like giant obsidian stones, strangely organic, but utterly alien in their appearance. They were a bleak reminder that Earth was never going to be the same again. The Cordolians had arrived, bringing their unique blend of advanced technology, military superiority, and not-so-subtle threats to Earth. She didn't understand the politics behind their arrival, but she knew they were dangerous. She didn't understand anything anymore. Ever since the crazies had taken her away, imprisoned her in their terrifying hidden facility, and operated on her, her life had turned into a surreal nightmare, where the impossible was possible, and nothing was as it seemed. Running her slender fingers along her shorn scalp, she felt the long craniotomy scar, extending from her temple to the back of her skull. It was slightly tender, but it had finally healed, leaving her forever marked and forever changed. What the hell had they done to her? She still didn't fully understand it. After the surgery, her world had been turned upside down. It seemed impossible, But ever since the SynCorp crazies had experimented with her, she'd been left with the ability to see inside other people's minds. Some days, she fought to hang on to the last shreds of her sanity. The images and voices flooding her shattered consciousness were almost too much to handle. But, sitting out here on this cold, rocky outcrop, staring at the menacing black structures rising out of the desert sand, she'd finally found the one thing she'd been craving for so long. Ever since that inexplicable surgery had been performed on her. Silence. The silence was blissful, and so overwhelming it was almost deafening. She gasped, choking back a sob. Tears threatened to spill forth, but they never came, her eyes remaining dry. She was numb inside, and she didn't know whether she could cry anymore. For once, she didn't need her ever-present audio buds. She didn't need music to drown out the cacophony of intrusive thoughts. For the first time in longer than she could remember, she'd found some semblance of peace. A gentle breeze caressed her from behind, and she tucked her freezing hands into her thin cardigan, shivering slightly as she pressed her fingers against her sides, trying to steal some warmth from her core. Her ribs seemed way too prominent. She'd lost weight since entering the facility, and now she was merely a shadow of the voluptuous woman she'd once been. They'd stripped everything from her, including her appearance. The soft scuff of cautious footsteps caused her to turn, and as she looked up, a shadow fell across her. "Gorgeous morning, isn't it?" The woman who approached her was wearing nothing more than a light, form-fitting Syntech jogging suit. It left her lower arms and legs bare, revealing her golden-brown, muscular limbs. Colorful images snaked down her left forearm, vibrant motifs of vines and flowers that contrasted sharply with the dark gray of her suit. Her curly hair was pulled together in a high ponytail, and it bounced as she walked. She was beautiful, but there was a certain toughness to her that was underscored by the long scars running down the side of her face. She wore her scars unselfconsciously, almost proudly, as if she'd long ago discarded the baggage that had come with them. Noah froze, worried that the woman was going to daub her in and have her hauled back to the infirmary. But the woman just flashed her a sunny grin and flopped down beside her, exhaling as she wiped perspiration from her brow. "Don't worry, I won't tell Ziara. I don't blame you for wanting some fresh air. You must be starved of sunlight after spending all that time locked away. I'm the same. If I don't get outside and run, I go a bit stir-crazy." Noah nodded, surprised at the woman's easy manner. "I was feeling a bit cooped up in there." She rubbed her arms, trying to warm herself up. Compared to this stranger, who was the very picture of health and vitality, she felt like a sickly waif, a pale imitation of her former self. "You're, not one of the medics, are you?" "Me?" The woman laughed, her dark eyes shimmering. "Lord, no. I'm just here because of my other half. You might have seen him around. He's the tall one with the long white hair and the horns. He's called Zal." Her eyes softened, lighting up with obvious affection for this Zal person. She was quiet for a moment, then she blinked, a sheepish expression crossing her face. "Sorry, how rude of me," She held out a strong, calloused hand. My name's Sarah. Noah took Sarah's hand. It was warm, contrasting sharply with her own frigid fingers. Noah. She narrowed her eyes, her scrambled brain struggling to comprehend what Sarah had just told her. Your other half is... Cordolian, Sarah smiled, shaking her head slightly. I know, it seems crazy, but at the same time, it feels perfectly right. I can't imagine myself with anyone else. Huh. Noah shielded her eyes as she stared out into the distance. The sunlight was becoming brighter now, rising over the small Cordolian city. The structures cast dark shadows across the vibrant ochre sand, creating a striking scene, which was almost like an abstract work of art. They appeared both sinister and elegant, much like the Cordolians themselves. Apart from her interactions with the medic, Ziara, she hadn't had much to do with the Cordolians. The rest of them appeared to be military types, severe and intimidating. They'd rescued Noah and the others from SynCorp's underwater facility with terrifying efficiency, eliminating any threat that stood in their path. The SynCorp guards hadn't stood a chance. When one of the warriors had been close enough for Noah to catch an imprint of his thoughts, she hadn't been able to get away from him quickly enough. He radiated danger from every pore, and his aura had felt harsh and abrasive. The mind of a Cordolian warrior was tightly controlled, with savage bloodlust simmering just beneath the surface. They were hard, unrelenting beings, accustomed to doing whatever they pleased. She wanted nothing to do with these fearsome creatures. They were killers. How someone like Sarah could get caught up with one of them was beyond her. The other woman, Abby, had gone one step further and had a child with one of them. Her mate was an imposing creature with piercing crimson eyes who projected an aura of fierce protectiveness. He had a hardness about him that spoke of a life of discipline, sacrifice, and bloodshed. In contrast, Abby was just so damn nice, just like Sarah here. It didn't add up. You've been away, Sarah said softly, interrupting her thoughts. The world's changed a lot in a very short period of time. Don't be intimidated by these guys, Noah. When you've had a bit of time to get your head around it all, it'll start to make sense, and you'll be able to figure out who's who. They might seem scary at first, but they aren't our enemies, far from it. A wry smile tugged at the corners of her mouth. It took me a while to figure that out, too. They did get us out of that horrid place, Noah conceded, shuddering as memories of the SynCorp facility filtered through her mind. Bad, bad things had gone on down there. After the surgery, her mind had been like a conduit for the suffering of others. She'd gotten a taste of everything that the other subjects had been forced to endure. Nothing could wipe those memories from her mind. The only thing that had kept her sane had been the music. She realized Sarah was scrutinizing her with a new level of intensity. I swear, I've seen you somewhere. Your face is strangely familiar. You probably have. I get that a lot, was all Noah said in response, carefully schooling her features into a neutral expression. I guess I just have that kind of face. She wasn't ready for people to recognize her.
She thought she'd changed enough that nobody would equate her with the old Noah, the bold, brilliant performer. Where had all her cockiness gone? There was a time when she'd felt she could do anything. Talk about a fall from grace. Sierra frowned, a shadow of suspicion crossing her face. Maybe you just look like someone I know. I swear I've seen you somewhere, though. To Noah's relief, however, Sierra didn't press the issue. She shifted uncomfortably, studying this strange, affable woman who so freely admitted to her relationship with an alien, as if it were the most natural thing on Earth. The world's changed since you've been gone. Noah froze as a stunning realization hit her. It had been so long since she'd been able to have a normal conversation with someone. It had been so long since she'd experienced total psychic silence, enabling her to control her own thoughts. She knew what the crazies had done to her. Impossibly, they'd turned her into a mind reader, but without any control over her ability. Usually, the uninterrupted flood of images, thoughts, and emotions entered her mind as a psychic blast of pure torment. But sitting here, with friendly Sierra by her side, she hadn't caught even a fragment of her thoughts. Strange. Was she somehow cured? Was Sierra immune? Or had everything just been a cruel, torturous dream? Sierra stretched her toned legs out in front of her, and stretched, easily reaching her toes. "I guess I'll be on my way, then," she remarked, gracefully rising to her feet. "Got another 5Ks to hit before it gets too damn hot out here." She winked at Noah, turning to leave. "Enjoy the sunshine, and don't worry about the Cordolians. While you're here with us, nobody will hurt you. Whatever happened to you back there won't ever happen again." Noah wondered how Sierra could sound so sure of herself. After what had happened to her, she no longer took anything at face value. Sierra took off with a curt wave, loping away down a sandy track as Noah turned her attention back towards the Cordolian's dark village. That's when it hit her. A psychic wave of powerful emotion, dark, seething, and undeniable, hit her like a bolt blast to the chest. The being who was responsible for this energy wasn't human. She understood that at once. He was also unmistakably male, and more than a little terrifying. Fury and control. He was both of these things at once, and Noah was sucked into his mind space like a butterfly drawn into a vortex, helpless against his raging thoughts. She reached out, trying to impose some semblance of control upon her own thoughts, but she didn't know how. She was clutching at puffs of air in a fierce, twisting gale. Then, as abruptly as it had hit her, the presence was gone, leaving an empty void, a vacuum of thought and emotion. Noah's breath was torn from her. She gasped for air, a faint sheen of sweat breaking out on her pale face. There had been something so compelling about him. For one sweet, dangerous moment, she'd been addicted to his presence. What the hell was that? Who was that? She had to be losing her mind, at least what precious little was left of it. Despair threatened to overwhelm her, but she fought against it, pushing down her confusion and fear. Get a hold of yourself, idiot. She'd been deceived, taken against her will, imprisoned, experimented on, and left with a talent she couldn't control. She didn't even want to think of what might have happened to her if the crazies had been given enough time to finish their work. Maybe they would have eventually broken her. But she wasn't broken, and now she possessed something. An ability. It had the potential to be extraordinary. All she had to do now was learn how to control it. Chapter 3. The newcomer regarded him silently, releasing tendrils of his kakui bit by bit, permitting Ashrael to see him with his second sight and know him. Everything else faded into the background as their minds touched. Even the general's intimidating presence was momentarily diluted, although Ashrael still felt a strong compulsion to kill him.
"Such a scary killing intent,"
the general's mysterious companion said mildly, his raspy voice betraying him as an elder.
"I'm relieved you've allowed yourself to be leashed, for your sake more than mine."
Ashrael shot him a baleful, sightless glare, his lips curving into a humorless smile.
"Be thankful for it, old man."
For a brief moment, he let go of his tightly controlled kakui, eliciting a sharp intake of breath from the elder. He reached out with his mind, trying to get a sense of this strange individual.
"You're like me,"
he said in astonishment, certain the old man could pick up on his mental speech.
"You're one of my kind. How is it that you are free of the mind bond?"
"We are of the same ilk," the elder conceded. "There are a few of us who were fortunate enough to survive the clutches of the program. In many ways, though, we're nothing alike. You're in a class of your own, youngling. It's a shame you were given up to the program. You have immense talent, but for it to be used for this purpose..."
He shook his head, sadness and disgust entering his voice. Ashrael felt a gentle, probing touch at the edges of his mind. Instinctively, he put his mental shields up, invoking a grunt of irritation from the old man.
"Relax," the elder grumbled. "I'm only taking a look. Let me in. It's not as if I can control you as your mistress does."
Ashrael growled, not wanting to be reminded of his fundamental weakness. His mistress couldn't reach him across the span of 9 galaxies. Nobody was powerful enough to reach that far. But the compulsions she'd skillfully woven into his mind bond were absolute. They sustained long after he left her radius, as they were built into the very fabric of his consciousness. With kill orders, he was no better than a programmed automaton. He'd been conditioned. Yet, he'd been left with enough awareness to hate it. He hated himself for not being strong enough to break free. On many occasions, especially as a novice, he'd tried to break the mind bond, but he wasn't strong enough. Any attempt to break the compulsions caused him severe pain. And, in the early stages of his training, any suggestion of rebellion had been met with brutal punishment.
"You will be loyal to the Empire. The Empress is your goddess, and through me, you will serve her without question until death takes you. You will not harm any friend of the Empire. You will not betray the cause. You will never utter a single word or see the true colors of the universe with your own eyes, because you have no need of such things. You are destined to walk in the shadows, existing between worlds,
Silence will be both your curse and your strength. You are my charge, my possession, my responsibility, and you will obey me without question. Kill Acadian. Bring his mate to me. Return to me, child.
Can it be broken, Patra Elgin?
The general's deep, commanding voice broke through his reverie. Ashrael's breath caught as the elder's psychic touch feathered along the edges of his consciousness. Sensing that the old man was no threat to him, he eased his barriers a little, letting the elder form a mental impression of him. Where in Cain's hells had Acadian found this wizened specimen? He'd thought all of his kind were given up to the Empire at birth. Hiding a Katach child was a capital offense. It meant risking death at the hands of Imperial enforcers, because sooner or later, the child would be found out. They always were. On Kithia, males born with psychic abilities were easy to identify. They all possessed the same features. Dark hair, black eyes, pale skin, and absent horn buds. Some said they weren't entirely Cordolian, that their blood was tainted with something other. Although nobody seemed to know what that other was, or perhaps they refused to speak of it. The one who trained you and shaped your mind bond was skillful, Elgin said, carefully withdrawing his coquy. She's achieved the correct balance between subservience and free will. You are a perfect tool, but not completely under her control. Theoretically, it may be possible to undo the damage, but it's beyond my humble abilities. It would take one much more powerful than myself to fix you.
It's possible, though, isn't it?
Acadian said softly, causing Ashrael to turn his blind stare towards the general. There was a note of dogged stubbornness in the general's voice, as if he considered Ashrael a personal project that he wanted to succeed at all costs. Perhaps the breaking of Ashrael's mind bond was symbolic of some greater universal struggle.
It's possible, although maybe not in this lifetime.
Resentful of the fact that he was having his fate discussed in front of him as if he were nothing more than a fat Turgic steed about to be shipped off to market, Ashrael rolled his eyes.
Tell the general he's dreaming. He should just do the logical thing and get it over with.
Even if Acadian somehow succeeded in breaking the mind bond, there was no way Ashrael would become his puppet.
Are you so in love with death's embrace that you'd spurn this chance at freedom, young one?
Elgin chastised him as if he were a wayward adolescent, his voice full of indignation. Ashrael shot him a dark mental glare as the general moved forward, his steps slow and deliberate. As Acadian neared, Ashrael's murderous intent grew so strong that it caused a sensation of sharp pain behind his temples. He momentarily lost control of his coquy, and the warriors holding him upright must have felt it, because they stiffened. If he had both his arms and full control of his body right now, he'd be moving, trying to acquire a weapon at all costs so he could separate the general's head from his neck. That seemed to be the only way to kill a freak of nature like Acadian, who could survive injuries that would kill any ordinary mortal. Although it pained him to admit it, Ashrael had underestimated these First Division warriors. He'd been so sure of his own abilities, cocky even, that he hadn't expected the general to be able to match him in speed and cunning.
I know how badly you want to kill me, Silent One, Acadian said,
his words thrumming with the promise of an unfinished battle.
You do not yet believe in what we intend to do, but you need to get over yourself. You need to understand that your only hope of freedom lies with us. I will find a way to break your mind bond, assassin, and you will repay the favor by taking a life for me.
Grim determination radiated from the general, and suddenly, Ashrael was struck with the absurd hope that the impossible might actually be possible. The thought was almost too much to bear. Acadian was crazy. He wanted to break a secret tradition that had been part of the Empire since its inception. The Silent Ones were the Empire's killers in the shadows, and, as assassins, they had no peer. They had taken down leaders, outlaws, warlords, and politicians. They had broken the backs of civilizations and destroyed merchant empires. If Kithia's military was the Empire's blazing sword, fearsome, brilliant, and intimidating, then its Silent Ones were the hidden dagger it kept at its back, to be used when one was unguarded and unaware. Ashrael sneered, meeting the general's piercing stare with his sightless eyes.
You think you can change the universe with your will alone, soldier?
Visions of Acadian meeting swift, silent death by his hand filtered through Ashrael's mind, but he was powerless before the general. From the neck down, he was paralyzed and disconnected from his body. His kakui swirled around him, uselessly. He couldn't even channel it into his limbs as he usually did, in order to enhance his speed and power. Unable to help himself, he laughed, a noiseless, bitter chuckle that surprised his captors. Captured by the enemy, missing his left arm, and motionless from the neck down, he was well and truly screwed.
You may laugh now, but you will change your tone when we succeed.
The general's tone was cryptic, his aura difficult to read. But, then again, Ashrael was having a hard time following anything. All he wanted to do was kill. Acadian turned to Elgin and said something to him in High Cordolian. The words sounded so familiar, yet Ashrael couldn't make any sense of them. Since when did military generals speak High Cordolian? Having come to some sort of agreement with Elgin, Acadian focused his attention towards Ashrael.
I won't subject you to this torture any longer. I will leave you to think on what we have discussed.
The general turned, an air of easy arrogance about him. It infuriated Ashrael more than it should have, but with the compulsion to kill clouding his thoughts and the neural immobilizer deadening his limbs, he couldn't do a thing. If all the demons of hell decided to sit down and devise a torture specifically for him, then this would be it. Being stuck in this pointless limbo, surrounded by one's enemies, was a fate worse than death.
Cynicism is the refuge of a poisoned soul, Acadian said on his way out,
and Ashrael thought he could hear a trace of irony in the general's voice. Asshole.
In your case, it's understandable, and none of us can pretend to be any better. But try and see the benefits of our arrangement. You aren't dead yet, Silent One, so think about making this lifetime a worthy one. Give me something I can work with, Katach.
Chapter 4. Where are my audio buds? Noah fought against her rising panic, staring at the empty charge dish in dismay. She'd left them at her bedside to charge, and now they were gone. Spending time alone in the desert had reinvigorated her and calmed her, but now her fragile composure was threatening to crack. She glanced around her small room, searching frantically for any sign of the small silver devices. But aside from her neatly made bed and a small wardrobe, there was nowhere to stash a pair of tiny audio buds. In a world of horror, the music coming from the audio buds had been her only respite. There was no way they could be gone. She stuck her hands into the pockets of her loose trousers, hoping she'd slipped them in there and forgotten about them. Nothing.
Seems like someone has a taste for human noise.
The universal words were spoken with a strange intonation. A scaly hand landed on Noah's shoulder, and she whirled, coming face to face with an alien. He wasn't Cordolian. This one was of the race that called themselves Soldar. He regarded her with a curious stare, and Noah froze, taken aback. This alien's eyes were strange. He lacked pupils, and his pale blue irises didn't have a defined border, bleeding into his sclera.
"Have you seen them, my buds?"
There was a frantic undercurrent to Noah's voice. Her audio buds were loaded with precious music. She'd carefully selected tracks which were able to pierce through the psychic chaos that always surrounded her. To her dismay, she'd found that the silence in the desert had been just a brief respite. Upon returning to the makeshift infirmary, she'd been assaulted with a cacophony of thoughts. The Soldar narrowed his eyes, the dark scales on his face gleaming in the bright light. There were pale patches on his cheeks where scales had fallen out, but they were starting to regrow. A vision assaulted her. It was an errant memory, still fresh in the Soldar's mind. She saw harsh lights and smelled acrid disinfectant. Doctors in masks surrounded them, their eyes hidden behind dark protective data lenses. The doctors spoke in English, but through the Soldar's fogged memory, she couldn't understand what they were saying. One approached them with a laser cutter, and Noah cried out as sharp pain lanced through their cheek.
Fuckers! Couldn't they have at least used sedation?
She dropped to her knees, overwhelmed by the memory. She was dimly aware of the Soldar kneeling beside her, concern radiating from him. He took her palm into his gentle hands. His touch was cold, his fingers covered in smooth scales.
"Try this," he whispered.
Sharp pain radiated through Noah's palm, as if she'd been pricked with a needle. She looked down and saw blood trickling from a small hole in her skin.
"What the hell did you just do?"
She recoiled, withdrawing her hand in shock and anger. The Soldar waved a sharp claw at her, raising a hairless eyebrow.
"It works, doesn't it?"
"What?"
"The interference is gone, isn't it?"
As her palm throbbed, Noah realized he was right. Pain had overridden the terrible intrusive memories that flooded her mind, shattering their grip. She dug her nails into her palm, savoring the pain. She'd endure this kind of pain any day if it would grant her clarity of mind.
"Focus on that point,"
the Soldar advised her, a hint of a smile tugging at his black lips. Noah stared at him in astonishment.
"This is almost better for my head than listening to Bach," she murmured. "How did you know?"
"I've seen how you behave in the midst of so many others. It is too much for you sometimes, no? I've come across your kind before. Chekskalich, that's what you're called in my language. Spent many revolutions on a merchant ship with one such as you. You can see beyond the physical, but your talent torments you. You need to find a way to control it."
Do you know how I can control it? Hope flared in her chest, only to be crushed as the Soldar shook his head.
Pain is the only thing. Pain is a focal point. Use it. It is a crude measure.